This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we have one sponsor for the show, and that is our friends at Jam Software. I'll tell you more about them as the show goes on. Bradley, good evening.
Good evening. It's a low 85 degrees Fahrenheit here today. Okay. It's a great day.
Okay. Good stuff. Well, how's the deployment going?
Done. Mm-hmm. Cases are on, and we are good to go. Had got all the profiles pushed. I've kind of SWAT checked them. They all look like they're good. Everything's on iOS 9.3.3. Apps are all pushed, so I'm completely finished. They are organized by the grade they're going into with sticky notes on top of my workbench, and so I'm ready to go. I'm really feeling really good about kind of the back-to-school process. I've never been this far along this early, even though this was my busiest summer ever, literally the busiest summer ever. So, good to go. Of course, that could change, but I have one more kind of database move to make in terms of our digital math curriculum that we get our textbooks, and that doesn't get processed until like the 25th of July. So I'm still waiting on that email. Then I've got to build that. But that's it. Literally the last big thing I have to do. And usually I'm like just getting started with a lot of that stuff at this point. So we have another week of summer break, and then teachers come back starting the 8th of August. So I'm in good shape. Wi-Fi is rocking along very nicely, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Yeah. But before we get to that, I think you've got a good story for us.
Yeah, we had one device that was broken in our set. We got 125 devices shipped, and one was broken. It was literally the last box I opened, which I wasn't going to open because I counted out there's going to be four spares for breakages, and I had decided just to leave them in the box, and I was sitting there thinking maybe I should just open them just in case or whatever. Then the last one I opened, the screen was broken. So I called up Apple, and they said we'll cross ship a replacement. So a new one arrived, and then I had to go and drop off the broken one at the courier depot. And the reason to bring that up is not because we've got a broken device, no big deal, but just to kind of go through the details of how that played out with device enrollment as well. And basically it was more or less as transparent as you would think, that the main shipment, if you like, the replacement device, once it's shipped, turned up in our Apple School Manager as being assigned to us, and it was assigned directly to our MDM server because that's the default server for our Apple School Manager installation. The thing that I'm not super clear about yet is what happens to the broken device. I mean, at the moment, that device is still in our device enrollment program list. We still sort of technically own that device from an enrollment point of view. And I wasn't given any instruction about what to do about that. So I'm going to just leave it there and keep an eye on it and see if maybe in a week or so if that serial number disappears from our server or not. And if it doesn't, then I might have to take a step to do what's called disowning in device enrollment. And disowning is essentially what you do to manually take devices out of your debt portal. And this is, you would maybe do this, say, if at the end of a lease you were selling all the devices, for example, you wouldn't want the new owners of the device to have to go through your enrollment process, obviously. So what you would do is you would disown them. And then the devices are essentially just like consumer devices at that point. They're not hooked into device enrollment at all. The thing about that, though, just to be aware, is that it's a one-time and forever process. You'll literally never be able to undo that step. So you don't want to experiment with that at all, because there's nothing you'll be allowed to do to get it back in. So it's just something to be aware of. I was sort of led to believe that devices that get swapped out for any kind of warranty problems, then the old number goes away and the new number arrives in your debt. But it didn't happen just like that. So I wonder if maybe when the package gets back to Apple and then gets processed as a return, then it will get taken out of our system as a kind of swap for the other one.
Well, you wonder if like that's going to end up being a refurbished model. And I don't know if refurbished models get new serial numbers.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how that works at all. So there was something at WWDC about that. There was, I think, maybe not this year, but last year, there was some talk about like, if you take a device to the Genius Bar and get it swapped, that the turnaround time for those new numbers to go back into debt had been cut to 4 hours. So it's not instantaneous, but say you walk away with a new device from the Genius Bar, that will eventually show up in your debt portal within a few hours, because Apple are obviously kind of logging which serial numbers are returned for repair and which serial numbers are issued as replacement devices or whatever. And there is some kind of crossover that happens in the system, but I just don't know whether, well, in a shipping situation like this, whether it's just the time lag that's caused that or if it's a different situation that I have to deal with it manually or not, but we'll find out.
You wonder if it's almost a manual process. You really do on these. I mean, I don't think the initial creation is manual.
Yeah.
Like when you're buying devices, that seems to be like automatic. But you wonder, like these swap out situations, it seems like it's got to be some sort of manual process. Or if it's like somehow hooked into the Apple Care system that, hey, this device was swapped out to this. And then maybe like there's a batch process that runs every 4 hours.
Yeah, probably that's exactly what it is. Yeah,
it's a workflow automator, or it's an automator action on somebody's Mac.
Yeah, somebody just hits play on a Python script every 4 hours. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's enterprise computing for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like somebody's doing it manually. Get to count recurring Outlook task notification.
Yeah, it's a workflow script on somebody's iPhone. Yep.
Yeah.
So that was that, and then the other thing was just to kind of talk a little bit about the 9.7-inch iPad Pro, which we've obviously got quite a few of now, and one of which I commandeered to test iOS 10 on. Yes, ahem, ahem. It's been super interesting to use that, go back to using like a modern 9.7-inch iPad from having used the big iPad Pro for so long, and it's quite different, actually. It feels kind of like coming home in a weird way, if you know what I mean. But at the same time, I just can't give up all the great stuff about the big iPad. What I did notice, though, was that in certain situations, like the smaller one is more discreet, and I feel more comfortable using it in those situations. And the thing I particularly liked about it was using the Apple Pencil and Notability together as a kind of notepad, if you like. So, you know, I've got a kind of stand for my big iPad Pro, and putting the little one on the desk and writing on it while looking at stuff on the other iPad was quite a nice way to do it. But obviously, yeah, it's quite an expensive kind of notepad, so I'll not be keeping it for that purpose alone. But the one thing I really, really like about the new iPad Pro is the True Tone display, and that is really, really nice, particularly when you're using it beside a device that doesn't have the True Tone display. You can really notice the difference. Yeah, because using the two iPad Pros together, only the smaller one supports that. Super fast, super light. Really, it's a nice cut in weight from our previous iPad, so kids will get a nice benefit from that in the weight of their bag as well. And the other thing to say is, I hadn't realized this, but the camera on the 9.7-inch iPad Pro also supports things like live photos. It supports basically the iPhone 6S feature set, so that'll be interesting to see what kids make of that when we get back to school.
Yeah, I wonder. I'm wondering if the iPad Pro this fall, like if the 12.9 inch, if it'll see 3D touch. That's the one thing that still doesn't, you know, hadn't kind of made it to the iPad line is 3D touch.
I suspect not, and I think the reason for it is that a lot of 3D touch depends on the sort of haptic feedback that you get through the device in your hand as well. And I suspect it would be quite hard to make that illusion stick across such a big space. And of course, no iPad has ever had any kind of vibration motor or anything in it, which is not to say it can't happen, but it'll be interesting to see if it ever does, or if there has to be some kind of workaround for it. Because on iOS 10, a lot of the features are kind of 3D touch first, if you like, and particularly on the home screen and the way you interact with notifications and so on. They really want to be 3D touched, and of course, iPads can't do that, so we'll see.
True. So, so what we want to talk about tonight is my new Wi-Fi deployment. And I want to talk through what we had, what we went with, and how my process on which I deployed this. So, we had just come past like year four of our existing Wi-Fi deployment, and I leased this, and like I did a 3-year lease initially, and then we came upon the year of that lease, and we just decided to renew our support for another year and just kept on with the lease. I'm glad we did. We pricing came down a little bit, so that was good. So we were coming off 39 Aerohive 120s mostly, but I think I had like three 330s and a few 121s in there. And so those have been end of life, so they're no longer selling those. They're still supported, but they're no longer selling those. And really, based on when I bought, I kind of bought like 6 months before it was the 121s run out, which was like a much thinner, more powerful model. So this was like a two-stream radio, the 120. So I was certainly happy to kind of see those go by. They worked great, and they'd been rock solid for years. But I had actually started to disable application control just because it really was taxing on the CPU in the 120. Because I think that AP may have came out in like 2009, 2010, but probably 2010, I'm guessing. But think, you know, since it was end of life in 2012, or they stopped selling it in 2012, so it was older. So what I replaced it with was 44 Aerohive 230s. So the 230 is an 11AC three-stream radio. So it's kind of comparable to the 330 that I had. It was so, but it was, you know, with it being three stream. Of course, I don't have any three stream devices like in mass. Most devices I'm deploying are MacBook Airs, which are two stream radios, and then iPad Air 2s, which I believe are still a one stream. I'm guessing. And I've since purchased outright. We leased this. I've since purchased outright an Aerohive 250 for a high density area, which I go over later. But we leased the 230s over 5 years. And so I, talking through with my previous Aerohive systems engineer, who's gone on to do some like database stuff, he's with a completely different industry. He said, hey, you know, if you want to do a 3-year lease, you can get by with the 130s. If you want to do a 5-year lease, you need to go to the 230s. And he said a lot of their education customers were going with 5-year leases on the 230s. So I thought, you know, I'd love just to do this and let it set for 5 years. That would be fantastic. It's not an old AP at all. It's relatively new. We love going to 11AC as well. Main thing difference in the 250 to the 230 is the 250 has 11AC Wave 2, which we don't have any Wave 2 devices. There are no Wave 2 devices in Apple's portfolio at this point, even on the desktop. The biggest difference in the 250 to the 230 is the 250 can do a dual 5 gigahertz. And so that means that one of the radios is software definable. So you can make it either 2.4 or 5. Just to give you, like, I think I've mentioned this before, just a little bit on like Wi-Fi channels. So there's two predominant channels. There are 2.4 gigahertz and then 5 gigahertz. 2.4 gigahertz, it's been around forever. It's really kind of... It'll probably be around for the time being because most of like your cheap IoT devices, that's what they use. Like my Nest at home, I have a Generation 2 Nest. It's 2.4 gigahertz only. The newest one now supports 5 gigahertz, but a lot of things, you know, 2.4, it's a little bit easier on battery. Distance-wise, it actually is better. Like it can actually travel farther. But the problem is it only has three non-overlapping channels. So like if you're in your home router connection, you see, hey, it says like set your channel. Most people just do automatic, but you can do 1 through 11. Well, in reality, if you kind of imagine like an RF kind of graph, you've seen those things. The like 1, 2, 3, and 4, and 5 like kind of all overlap with 6. So the only ones that don't cross over there between 1 and 6 are 1 and 6. 2, 3, 4, and 5 are all overlapping. And the same thing all the way up to 11. So you really only have three that don't overlap. So it's 1, 6, and 11. And so this is – so let's say you have a device that can see, for whatever reason, can see 6 access points, okay? Well, you've got co-channel interference there. Co-channel interference means something like you have multiple APs broadcasting on that channel. Ideally, in a 2.4 gigahertz scenario, the APs can only see two other APs, and they're all on separate channels. And how you achieve this is either just by sheer luck, or but you reduce the power down on certain APs, or you have some radio. If you have, say, like a dual band router, you turn off the 2.4 radio. So this makes it difficult in high density environments because you often need additional access points. Again, you have to shrink the power down to be able to do that. But 5 gigahertz, for example, depending on where you live at, your country, it kind of varies from country to country and your location, you have anywhere from 19 to 23 non-overlapping channels. So it's much easier. You can see going from 3 to, you know, at the low end, 19. Much, much easier to do a deployment and to cover high density. So the great thing about the Aerohive 250 is it can do dual 5 gigahertz. So, like, I've actually, on a couple places of my 230, I actually... disable the 2.4 radio and just have a single 5 gigahertz radio. 250 is a little bit more expensive. That's why I didn't deploy those, because I didn't need that everywhere. But again, so you can see what we're doing there. Yeah, it's great AP. Again, Wave 2 as well. I gotta have a specific use case for that. I'll explain later. Okay, so get these APs in. First thing I did, now I am on Aerohive's Hive Manager NG platform now. It stands for Next Generation. I was coming off of Hive Manager 6. So like, I think you're still using Hive Manager 6, right? Okay, so I'm on NG, which is their newest platform. Looks a lot nicer. It's a very, feels a lot more modern. The configuration was a lot easier as well. And I'm not going to kind of walk through the configuration process specifically, but I'm going to tell you kind of how I configured mine. But the configuration process is much faster. So radio profile setup. So my APs have two profiles, a 2.4 profile and a 5 gigahertz profile. A lot of people can't get away with this, but I do. I deny anything but 11N and up traffic. If you have an 11G laptop, I do not allow you on our Wi-Fi.
It's time to move on. Just, yeah.
It is. I mean, the 11N was mature in 2009. I think it was 2009. It really became like a – I think it was officially ratified in 2009. I think Apple laptops had them in 2007. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the old MacBook that you had to pay like $5
yeah, there was
to
like
download?
Yeah, that was a Sarbanes-Oxley thing, wasn't it? You know,
is 11N Wi-Fi enabler. Yeah. I mean, it's some sort of software thing.
Those are strange times for software updates. Yeah.
Yes, it was. That was like with the iPod Touch. Exactly, iOS updates had to cost money. But yeah, so and of course, the thing what that does is when you have 11G clients on your network, they could kind of slow everything down. So, yeah. And I had done this on our old one towards the end of the lease. And I actually got a complaint once, like someone from a guest that couldn't get online had a really old laptop. And I just said, sorry, we don't allow 11G devices on our network. It's 11N only, 11N and 11AC devices. You take some flack for it here and there, but it's just way better off in the long term.
Yeah. I mean, is there any, apart from really old laptops, is there anything else that uses a band that old? I mean, I was thinking, I seem to recall something about some kind of older Amazon Kindles that would only, even in the time of 802.11n being very current or, you know, quite mature, they were still selling like the lowest end Kindle was like an 11G device or something like that. I can't remember the details of that, but I remember in times past having this discussion with somebody and the only reason we could think of was that some people might rock up with an old Kindle and try and get online.
Yeah, well, and you know, it's like my thing too is I'm not going to make networking decisions that impact our like school owned devices for people that are not our guests.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we had a corporate reason to do it, that'd be great. So on the 5 gigahertz profile, I'm using 40 megahertz channels, so you could do 20, 40, or 80. Mm-hmm. I believe the, like, you know, theoretically Wave 2 devices can use 160 megahertz channels.
That's a wide channel.
The higher you go up, the less frequency reuse opportunities you have. So 160 in enterprise is like probably unusable. 80 is going to be very, very, very tough.
And the reason for that being that the wider the channel, then the more it overlaps with neighboring frequencies, right?
So, right, exactly. Yeah. And so 20, if you want like the, you know, from a very high density standpoint, 20 is your best.
Because then you can have multiple access points in the same area using different channels, and every channel is narrow enough that they don't collide with each other, right?
Yeah. Bingo. Okay. And 80, if you like in a situation where like, you know, I'm trying to think of like, let's say you've got, like at my high school, the ROTC camp like area. Do you guys have ROTC there? It's like,
what does it stand for?
It's, I don't even know what it stands for. It's like basically like army stuff.
Oh, right. Yeah. We there are similar things to that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So like at my high school, that was like in a completely separate building by itself. Well, that's a place you might could use like 80 megahertz. You just want raw speed. It's around no other APs. I'm using 40 megahertz on our 230s.
Okay.
So I'm like, you know, it's you're pretty fast, but it's there's enough free channels that it doesn't really impact each other, but it's still really fast. I can do speed tests and get, you know, 120 by 120 very easily. I am not doing band steering, but what band steering is when you say, hey, I want to I want like 60% of my clients on 2.4 and 40% on 5 gigahertz or vice versa. I'm not doing that. I'm kind of letting the clients dictate that. But I am balancing client load among APs. So what that is like if I have, let's say a device can see three APs and one is like closest and there's one that's a little farther away and a little farther away than that. But they're still relatively fast. As an AP starts to see a higher load, it may move some to a slightly worse AP to balance the load among the access points. So you don't want to have like an access point. You know, if you have, you know, I'm thinking like a library that maybe had two, for whatever reason, a huge library had two access points. You don't want one to like have 80 clients and the one to have five. You'd ideally want them to have like, you know, 40-something each.
But this is at best advisory, isn't it? What's happening there is essentially the access point is trying to persuade the client to switch access points. Is that right?
Where you have some issue is on the band steering because mm-hmm. the clients ultimately determine that. But what AP they're on, the APs can move them around.
Okay.
Device template, and so what this is like it. I tell Arrowhive what I want the ports to mean. So the 230 has two ports. Port 0 is a PoE port, and I'm using that as my uplink to actually broadcast to Wi-Fi. And port 1, oddly enough, is a bridge. So this is where, like, if you had a printer that was near it, you could, like, wire in the printer to, like, a network into a wired connection.
Yeah, we do that a lot. We've got 330s all over the school, and we do that a lot as well. You know, so if there's like one computer in the classroom, or a really good thing to do here actually is put your Apple TV into that. So if you have an access point in the classroom, just run a cable to the Apple TV, and then you've got. If you're not using Ethernet generally for most things, then that's a nice way to take some of the load off of your Wi-Fi.
And another use for this would be if you have like a really highly critical area, you could actually wire it into two switches as a, like separate switches as a failover.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so that's kind of my radio profile set up. Why don't we take a minute and thank our sponsor for the week? That's Jamf Software. Mm-hmm. You guys know Jamf. They make the great Casper suite that covers Macs, iPhones, iPads, Apple TVs that you can enroll into. You can roll these devices into your management system. You manage them all from the web. Incredibly easy, incredibly efficient. You can host it yourself on your own infrastructure. You can host it on Amazon Web Services. You can host it on a Mac Mini Colo, or they'll host it for you. I'm using the hosted version of Jamf Software. Frazier, I know you're hosting it on Amazon Web Services. Can't say enough about it. Had day one support of iOS 9.3 features. Has great support for Apple School Manager. Can't say enough about it. So if you're working through an iPad deployment right now and you don't have an MDM, check out Jamf Software. You can learn more about Jamf and the Casper Suite at jampsoftware.com. That's jamfsoftware.com. Okay, so deployment process. This was incredibly fast. And so, again, I had an existing Arrowhive deployment that I'm basically overbuilding or kind of swapping out in process. So I didn't go in and unplug everything and then have nothing. So I just had, you know, kind of running two different, slightly, you know, same SSIDs, but just two different networks for, you know, minutes at a time. So I got my profiles built, got my configuration set using the same SSIDs, really roughly the same firmware firewall policies. Biggest thing is like on the guest network, they only get internet access. They're denied all other, you know, they don't get any local area network connection access because Arrowhive APs have firewalls built into them, so it can do that. It's really, really a nice feature. So I built my profiles. Now, here is one mistake I made. For whatever reason, when I was making the staff SSID, our SSID names are BB staff, but for the staff, like Brainerd Baptist staff. Okay. For whatever reason, I just made that one staff.
Ah.
Well, that's just a whole different SSID.
Nobody knows that one.
And yeah, nobody knows that one. I mean, and you could connect to it, but your device is not going to know that until you do it. So just remember, I made that mistake. So what I would do is I would unbox like four APs at a time. What I would do is I would enter their serial numbers into Hive Energy NG. I would then go in there and name them, or like, you know, give them a name that I could identify where they're at in the future. And I'm, when I go back to build my topology maps, I kind of know where they're at. I'll upload our blueprints and can know where they're at. We'd do that, rename the device host name to that, and click save. And so those devices are just in there. And what I would do then is I would go unplug old access points, plug in these, you know, just walk around, do it one by one. And we've got a big enough network where only a few people like actually noticed I was like they didn't have connection for a few minutes. Most of the time they would like maybe see a slightly worse connection for a few minutes, but they would still have connectivity with like the existing deployment. And by the time I got back to my Mac, I probably should have just like walking around and did this, but it was just like one less thing to carry. Got back to my Mac. They were downloading the configuration and the current gold firmware. So Arrow I Hive has two different firmwares. They have the gold and they have the latest. So the gold is more of like, this is, you know, completely stable. We, you know, as bug-free as possible. And then there's the latest, which is still very stable, but there may be some, maybe a known issue that's new. So there's, you know, and I'm happy to run the latest one. I eventually pushed all that out. So I would do four at a time. You know, it would take me about 15 minutes per set by the time I walked around, plugged up, got back. And again, I didn't have to touch them once they plugged up. Like I didn't ever touch these APs again. They all found my Hive Manager NG account just fine. Downloaded the latest firmware, the latest gold firmware, downloaded my configuration, and I was good to go. Most of them came with like 6.4 R1, and then I think 6.5 R2 is the latest gold one. So that, I mean, it was done within minutes. I did this over 3 to 4 days, really, and so, you know, really no users noticed. The only time they noticed is it was when I was fixing that SSID issue. Because that was kind of when I had finished everything. You know, most people, and yeah, I had one person notice, and they're like, "Hey, the Wi-Fi went down." I said, "Yeah, give me 5 minutes. Sorry, go get some coffee." That's kind of the process, and I just did that one by one, you know, set by set by mm-hmm. set, and then eventually I was done. Had all of my old gear boxed up, and the existing lease company, which is a local company, came out and picked it up and said, "Thank you very much, and have a good day."
Great. Let me ask you a question about that. In terms of like AP placement, what do you do for that? Do you have them all like on the ceiling or up in a wall or something? Or
it depends on the area. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing: in a brand new overbuild, I recommend obviously ceiling deployment. I mean, the ideal way is on the bottom end of the ceiling tile, you know, with the obviously wired in. Well, we've got a lot of areas. Number one, that leak. Number two, that are extremely difficult to get new wires to. Just because of the age of our building. A lot of concrete walls, a lot of firewalls, mm-hmm. I mean physical firewalls, yeah. not the digital ones. And so some of them are in the ceiling. Some of them are on a classroom, like on a, you know, end table in the classroom. And it's not ideal, but it's what I, you know, getting new wires to these places would be very, very, very difficult. And so it's just we do it, you know, it works. It's not the prettiest thing, but when you've got a building that's 80 years old, you don't always do things that are perfect.
Yeah. I've kind of toyed with that. We haven't ceiling mounted very many. We've got one or two. They're not exactly on the ceiling because of where they are, but they're high on the wall, for example. I just feel like things move around sufficiently in our school every year that I don't want to screw things down too much. I'm going to do a wee bit of work on the placement of one or two because we have moved about half of the classrooms this summer. So that obviously means like the density changes because if we take out like a large primary class from one room and put in an advanced art class for the upper school that may only have 5 or 6 pupils in it, then the numbers change in different places. So I'm going to have to think about that a little bit when we get back as well. But in terms of physical placement, I haven't done too much beyond the basics with that, like putting it on a high shelf in the classroom or something like that, mostly. But I might do a little bit more work on that over time.
And what you don't want to do, and I know in some situations, like some deployments I've seen, they don't want the AP showing. Like, mm-hmm. And so they'll put them on, you know, on kind of above the ceiling tile. And that is fine as long as you remember to face the AP down. Don't face it up, face it down. It's like, yeah. You know. Again, we have a lot of leaks just because our building's really mm-hmm. old. Like, we have leaks. Like, I had in our library, I don't know if I mentioned this on the show, we had like a really bad leak 3 weeks ago in our library. And we had some of our Chrome desktops got wet. Thankfully, they were fine. It was just the base that got wet. But that's kind of a perfect example. It's like, we have leaks throughout our building. And I certainly don't want APs that are very expensive to get rained on. And we are the same way. Like, classrooms move around, needs move around. And again, it's not the most cleanest environment, but It is what it is. Yeah. And I just and if somebody asks, hey, why don't you ceiling mount these? It's, I just explain, like, we have leaks and we move these things around. Classrooms move around, like places we had classrooms in last year. We don't always have classrooms in this year based on how the grade, based on how the, like, the enrollment numbers look. Like, you know, this year, like last year, we had 3 first grades and 2 kindergartens. Well, this year we have 2 first grades and 3 kindergartens. And so I moved an AP. I kind of moved an AP around because of that.
I was going to tell you my sort of best stupid Wi-Fi positioning story that I ever heard was there's a sort of pet superstore in our town called Pets at Home, and they try to be very sophisticated, and the staff walk around with iPad minis that they use to kind of book your order of a pet on the iPad while you're walking about the store. Except they have this huge wall built entirely of fish tanks, right? So you can see all the fish and stuff, and obviously it's full of water. And the Wi-Fi access points for this whole store are on the other side of the wall of fish tanks, which of course is just like a gigantic radio absorber. So these iPad minis just basically don't work to get through to their web app in order to buy your stuff. So the guy was like, you know, if I stand around the end of this bit and if I hold it up above my head, it just sort of works. It's like, yeah, maybe just want to run that cable over the top and drop it on the other side. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, again, there's always like, I'm building a new building, greenfield decisions, and then there's, you know, existing building decisions. Again, especially like ours, where it costs money to run new wires, and that's obvious money I kind of always like to spend elsewhere, unless I have to. I mean, obviously, like if we're running a new place, we put that in the ceiling. That's ideal. But if I don't have to, I don't have to. So we're talking about this 250 purchase and why I did that and where it's going. And so, okay, so mentioned before, Brainerd Baptist School is affiliated with Brainerd Baptist Church, legally separate organizations, but like same building, you know, 60% of our board is church members and things like that. So we have 2 services in our church. Our worship services are, we have like a traditional service in the sanctuary, and then we have a family life center across the street, which is a very, very large building as well, and we cover Wi-Fi in there, and we have a service in the gym. So like every Saturday they come in, like we have a crew that comes in there and kind of converts that to a portable sanctuary. Like they set up AV gear. The screens are actually mounted up high, but like they put up chairs, build the stage, all the audio gear comes out. I mean, it's like truly a portable sanctuary every week. And it was always difficult to like wire APs into the gym because A, it's like just expensive because it's all these concrete walls. I mean, it's a gym. Like, you have to drill through concrete. Mm. And then they play basketball in there a lot. A lot of people play basketball in there. And I don't want these APs getting smacked. And again, like, I could put them high in the ceiling, but gosh, it's, we have to rent, like, a big machine to come out there and, like, you know, it's just, I don't want to deal with that. And that's just a lot of money for something that's not, like, not that it's not important, but, you know, it's like, it's not like, it's not as important as, like, lights or HVAC. Like, mm-hmm. you know.
The building's usable without it, right?
Bingo. And so, like, we had fine coverage. Like, I had APs around the gym, but just like nothing in the gym, for example. And so, it was fine coverage. And so, I had this idea, like, it's a portable sanctuary. Why not have a portable access point?
Yeah, it's just another part of your equipment alongside the
bingo, audio, yeah. Bingo. And we've been doing this for years. And so, we have wired Ethernet in there, and the reason we do that is because like we used to have a lighting system that was wireless, and it was 2.4 gigahertz and it would channel hop. So I couldn't even like, you know, build my Wi-Fi network around working, you know, apart from it. It was just channel hop between 1.6 and 11. And so this we now have a wired lighting system. So at the time, I said, well, you know, this was so we could like actually have our production materials in there, could download new materials. So we got to wire these things into the network. So we have like a little wiring panel in the back of our gym, back ultimately behind where the sound booth becomes, and there's wired Ethernet in there. And so I thought, like, we already wire everything in. Let's just have an AP just in there on Sunday. So like every time I log into my Hive Manager right now, it says one access point disconnected because it's, you know, with all that portable sanctuary gear. So again, I mentioned we have lots of AP coverage around the gym. And so what I decided to do is put in a 230 in there with the 2.4 radio turned off. So this would be just like in the sound booth, cranking out really, really fast, 5 gigahertz. So like I was at church on Sunday, but in their 8:30 service, pretty crowded, was in the middle. I specifically sat in the middle of the gym. I did a speed test, 120 by 120.
Pretty cool.
I'll take that all day long. So really, really, really strong coverage. I checked, And that AP saw a lot of activity. A lot of devices saw that first, and so it did. You know, this was under a decent load, and so I thought, well, why not put in a 250 here, and it can be I can do dual 5 gigahertz because 5 gigahertz in iOS devices has matured enough where they're the only ones I really care about. Mm-hmm. So every iPad has always had 5 gigahertz, and the iPhone 5 and newer has 5 gigahertz. If someone still has a 4S and you know, they can see one of the other APs, but my in the gym Wave 2 fast AP is going to be dual 5 gigahertz, and so it's on the way, and I'm really really excited about that. But it's only going to be used for like we have a Saturday service in there, so it'll probably be used for 4 or 5 hours a week. But it's going to accomplish its purpose. It's going to have great coverage, and it's going to have two radios for even better capacity.
Nice. You put me in the mood to upgrade.
Yeah. Well, so a little bit about that. We are doing, yeah, like I mentioned, we're doing a 5-year mm-hmm. lease, but we also we applied for E-rate. And Chris, you can't do that, but we applied for E-rate, and we were kind of waiting on that funding to come in. But thankfully, by doing a 5-year lease, my lease payment was actually like $15 more a month than my current lease. So we just went ahead and did it, just because I don't want to have to wait and do this like when the funding comes in August or September. And so when that check comes, I will just basically pay the lease out of that until it runs out, and then we'll cover it with regular budget money. So my original plan was to, like, I think we spent $22,000. So my original plan was to basically let the service provider get the E-rate check and then just lease us, like, the rest. Mm-hmm. But so the new plan will be we lease the entire thing, and we'll just kind of pay the budget money out of that, or pay the lease out of that. So it's kind of all the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I want to work on at some point is putting our Wi-Fi system onto a rolling lease, because at the moment we own our hardware, and it's fine. It's all AP330s, and we don't have that many of them, right? We have, 9 or something? so it's not like, it wouldn't be a massive bill for us to go ahead and lease something like that. But the other thing I want to do is our switch infrastructure is pretty old, and I think that could all do with a modernization at some point, but that's probably not this year's job. But I'd like to kind of do that off cycle with the iPad deployment, so I don't want to be doing both of those in the same year, just like you are.
Yeah, that was real fun. yeah. The only advantage of that is it's kind of like you feel like you got a whole new infrastructure, but yeah, that probably wasn't the best. Probably wasn't the best thing in the world to do, but I won't have to do it again for 5 years. So I'm really excited about it. It was fun to do that. It was fun to have new hardware, and I've spent a lot more time kind of digging into our dashboard and looking at seeing who you know kind of what kind of traffic we're using. And I think I mentioned last week we had a group of kids on our campus from an organization called World Changers that are like doing service projects in the area, and they actually sleep at our campus. It was really interesting to look at the Wi-Fi stats. Like Snapchat was by far, far and away the most used social network. And these are all like high school kids, but it was all Snapchat. Facebook and Twitter were like on the low end of usage. Like I think each of them used maybe like 15, 16 gigs the whole week, and like Snapchat was like 5 times that. Spotify was like non-existent.
Really interesting.
It was not like 3 gigs for, and of course audio is not that much. No. But you just, you know, in some ways you think of it a little bit higher than that. YouTube was huge, mm-hmm. as you would think. And Apple iTunes traffic was a lot. And that could be a lot of things, like that could be App Store, that could be actual iTunes downloads, that could be Apple Music.
Yeah.
That could be a lot of things. And it doesn't include like software updates because that's broken out separately. Mm-hmm. But Apple iTunes was actually like the highest. But again, that encompasses quite a few services. Netflix was very high as well, and then so was Instagram.
Yeah, we basically see similar things like that as well. You know, the video services are big, particularly because we use a lot of that in teaching as well. So it's not something I restrict in any way because our kids use it a lot for school purposes as well. There's not a YouTube for schools and YouTube for not schools. Well, there is like YouTube for schools, but it's not really obviously identifiable in your networking logs as such.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like I let everything run really fast, mm-hmm. and we have really really fast bandwidth. And until I need to restrict it, I can do things like put Netflix traffic at the back of the queue and give it low priority.
Yeah.
But until Netflix traffic's causing me an issue, yeah, I'm fine with leaving it how it is.
Yeah. I mean, I think we must have, you know, I've taken down our MDM now, so I can't do the stats, but I don't think more than maybe like 5 users ever had Netflix installed in their device. Spotify was much bigger in terms of like a media source, but apart from YouTube. A lot of the senior kids, particularly kids who are doing things like art, where they sit for a long time kind of working by themselves and stuff, they were listening to a lot of music while class was going on. But some teachers are more into that than others. I'm not personally a teacher that likes to have people listen to music in my class, but then it's a different thing from art. You know, art's a lot of hours just spent doing your own thing.
Right, and it's like it's more, you know, it's like sitting there brainstorming. And, yeah, I'm fine with it, as long as it's not disrupting other kids. Mm-hmm. So that's my Wi-Fi deployment story. Yeah. It's like been running 2 weeks, and it's been working great. I'm having a lot of fun with it. So hope you guys enjoyed that. If you have any questions about it, definitely get in touch on Twitter, or you can ping us at outofschool.net. But anything else for this week?
No, I think we're good. I'm just back to thinking about teaching now. I've got a textbook to read for my new course.
Yeah, summer is ending. Class letters have gone out at our school, and it's about that time.
Yeah.
So hope everybody's having a great summer. Hope everybody is excited about school starting, because I'm actually less busy when school starts, so mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to my life slowing down just a bit.
Cool.
Oh, okay. So thanks to Jamf for sponsoring the show. If you want to contact us, you can get in touch at outofschool.net. If you have any questions, we have a feedback form there. I'm Bradley Chambers on Twitter, and you can find me on the web at chambersdaily.com.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web.